I'm John Krall. Coming up on No Limits, we're going to talk about what it takes to secure the services of the people who secure the public safety. We're going to talk about what it takes to find and recruit the right people for public safety jobs. We're going to talk about what qualities are important for the people who protect us and how recruiters go about identifying those qualities. We'll discuss this with two great guests, Indiana State Police Captain Dave Burston and Indianapolis Fire Department Captain Kevin Gibbons. Please join the conversation by calling 1-866-476-3881, emailing nolimits@wfyi.org, or connecting via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, executive editor of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We are talking today about recruiting and finding people who work in public safety. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Well, I'd like to welcome, we've got a great set of guests here today, including one returning guest, Indiana State Police Captain Dave Burston. Dave, welcome back to the program.
Thank you. It's delightful to be here. I really appreciate the invitation.
Oh, certainly. It's always good to have you here. And first-time visitor, Indianapolis Fire Department Captain Kevin Gibbons. Kevin, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much, Jonathan. I thank you for the opportunity to be here.
Oh, glad to do it. Well, I want to start first. I mean, you guys obviously fill somewhat different functions. Obviously, public safety is in mind. But in terms of recruiting people to work, to do this kind of work, who do you start looking for? What kinds of people make we'll start on the police side. I know there's a friendly rivalry between these two. Well, we hope it's friendly over the years. Dave Burston, you know, what qualities do you look for? What makes a good police officer?
Well, John, before I address the answer, I do have to tell you, it is a friendly rivalry, and I think that you'll find if you talk to any police officer or any firefighter, each one thinks the other is crazy. Mm-hmm. So I say, well, why would I run into a burning
and
building?
And some of us think you're both crazy.
Very true. Yeah. I ask, why would you run into a fire, into a burning building? And they ask, why would you run toward gunfire? Mm-hmm. So it works out either way. But I think there's some similarity in the people that we're looking for. We are looking for people that are self-motivated, people that can work well with little to no supervision, people that are trainable. And both of our professions require people to fall within a certain age category because there are limits to when you can apply. For us, you have to be 21 by the day you graduate the academy. So it means you can start before you're 21, but graduation between the time you start and the time you graduate, you have to have your 21st birthday. Likewise, on the top end of it, you can start when you're 39, but graduation date has to be before you turn 40. And the reason is you have to have 25 years in our defined pension plan to get a full pension, and we do have a mandatory retirement age of age 65.
I'm going to stick with that for a second. How long does the training, at least for the academy, how long a process is that?
After the selection process, which in and of itself takes 4 months or so, the actual academy runs about 6 months.
And is it a residential experience where they're there all the time?
Excellent question. They are residing there. They're there Monday through Friday. They are there overnight. On Friday night, whether they want to or not, we kick them out. And they spend Saturday and Sunday either at home or wherever, and then they report back the following week.
Okay. Kevin Gibbons, what sort of people make the best firefighters?
Well, you know, I would start off by saying, echo what Dave has said, the trainable people, the people that are interested in helping others. Obviously, to be a firefighter, you know, we're looking for people that are very physically fit and very brave and courageous. But there's one thing that we really can't train into recruits, and that is compassion. You have to have a level of compassion for people. This is a public servant job. So to be able to reach out help people from different races, economic status. It takes a lot of heart to be able to do that. So on the fire side, that's what we're looking for. And we also have those age requirements. You have to be 21 to apply. And then our upper age is we have to swear you in before your 36th birthday.
Oh, so you've really got a 14 to 15 year window.
Exactly.
So. Okay. And is it the same sort of reason that because of the pension, or is it more a concern that people who are north of their mid-30s just can't handle the physical demands?
Well, no, it's definitely related to the pension. PERF guides a lot of that stipulation on the 36th birthday. So, yeah, it's a 20-year retirement, and they just want you to invest 20 years into the fire service, being a young person instead of being 40 or 45 years old. You know, once you get to 20 years, you're 65 years old, and the job is physically demanding. Mm-hmm. And it's more likely that a 55, 60-year-old person is more likely to get hurt than a 25, 30-year-old person. Mm-hmm.
We are talking about recruiting and finding good people to work in public safety. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Well, I know Dave Burstyn indicated that with the police, particularly the state police, I presume, there is a four-month sort of selection process before they even decide. Is there a similar sort of process for working in a fire department?
Well, on the fire side, we open our process up to people between 21 and 36 or 35. Everyone that signs up gets an opportunity to take the written exam. And then 70% or higher on that exam moves you to the next phase in the hiring process.
And what is that next phase?
The next phase is the oral interview after the written exam. So our process typically lasts between 6 to 8 months, maybe sometimes approaching a year, to select candidates out of that pool group of people that apply.
And what sort of things on the written exam are you testing for?
Yes, we cover reading comprehension, basic math skills. There's no algebra or trigonometry or calculus on our tests. We cover grammar and spelling, and then some basic problem-solving questions. And the test is about 500 questions, and it's multiple choice.
500 questions, not an insignificant test. How long does that take to administer?
Yeah, it normally takes, and I think we give 2.5 to 3 hours to take the test. I might have been maybe 300 questions, 300 to 400 questions, I would say.
It's been a while since you've had to take
it.
You've tried to wipe it from your memory, right?
It's been a while since I've taken it, but we just administered this test back in July.
Okay.
And I'm guessing, John, that it was somewhere between 300 and 400 questions.
Okay, and there are only a couple of times during the year, only one time during the year that you administer it, or?
Well, yes, we administered that test one time out of a three-year period.
Okay. Oh, only
out of a
one?
out of a three-year period.
So you've got to pick your moment fairly carefully here. If you want to become a firefighter, you
exactly.
Is this all through the state, or is it just in this community?
Well, every department there are some differences, but just slight differences. But here for IFD, we hire or have a hiring process about every 3 years. Now, we hire maybe once or twice during that three-year period because we create a list, an eligibility list, from all of the testing, from the hiring process. So once we establish, say, 200 firefighters on this eligibility list, we will start a class of 40, graduate that 40, and then if there's a need for the fire department to add additional firefighters, we will go back to that eligibility list and grab another group of firefighters.
We're talking about finding good people to work in public safety here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org or connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Dave Burstyn, you mentioned that four-month period.
Yes.
What is that? What is involved in that process? What sorts of things are you looking for determining?
Well, let me tell you that, but one thing I'm totally remiss in mentioning is that we are actively taking applications this very moment.
Oh, well, where should people go if they're interested in
doing
this?
They need to go grab your nearest computer, go to Google, type in Indiana State Police. You'll find our website. Once you open the State Police website, look to the left side. You'll see something that says Career Opportunities. Click that. Follow the prompts. It'll tell you for troopers. The application is online. The only way we take applications is online. So you have to have access to email and an address that we can get back to you with to stay in constant communication with you. So that's happening now, and that closes on the 31st. So if you wait until 12:01 on April 1st to put in your application, you're not going to meet for this process with an academy that will start in November and graduate in April of 2014.
So they have to do it before this Sunday, then?
They have to do it before this Sunday. And we presently have close to 3,000 applications on file now.
For how many positions?
We have 90 positions.
Oh, so it's going to be fierce competition.
The competition is significant. Now, the good news that I will tell people is that we anticipate running another academy in July of 2014. So this process that's closing March 31st will start again sometime later this year.
And do you, is it an annual event, or do you just do an academy when you think there's a need?
We do as needed and as funding is available. We're able to forecast our retirement because we do have a mandatory retirement age. We also have something that's called a drop. That's a whole different conversation, but it allows us to forecast when people are going to retire because they state their intent. They'll sign up and they say, 3 years from the date that I executed this agreement, I am retiring. That's irrevocable. Mm-hmm. So that lets us forecast what we'll need. Then it comes back to, you know, economic conditions, the health of the state economy, the ability to train, equip, and continue to employ the new troopers.
We've gotten an email question from a listener who did not want to go on the air, doesn't want her name used. Says, and this one's for Kevin, how does the fire department work to recruit women for the force? Do women face difficulties in this career as a minority? What advice would you give to women looking to break into this field? Actually, I think we could probably apply that also to the state police.
Well, we encourage our females to apply for the fire department. Currently on our force, and we have approximately 1,200 firefighters, we have 70 women on the Indianapolis Fire Department. And some of the women that are on our department, we have chiefs, captains, and lieutenants that are females that are on our department. And, I mean, this is a male-dominated profession. There's going to be some physical requirements, and the women take the same test that the men take. We don't dummy down the tests or the physical ability
tests. It's gender neutral.
It's gender neutral, exactly. So I would encourage women to apply. Matter of fact, that's our big push, mm-hmm. Is to have more women in our process.
And how are you trying to encourage women to apply?
Well, we attend a lot of the women conferences, just seeking individuals to get exposed to the fire department. We visit college campuses, career fairs all over the city, reaching out to women and trying to entice them or engage them to apply for the Indianapolis Fire Department. We also offer individuals, male and females, to come and ride along with IFD for a 12-hour period to get a better inside look of what we do on a day-to-day basis.
And you say there are 70?
Out of a
workforce for the fire department of how many people?
Of approximately maybe 1,200 firefighters, somewhere between 1,200, 1,300 firefighters.
Okay, so somewhere between, sounds like 6 or 7%?
Yes.
Of the workforce, somewhere around there?
Yes.
Well, less than 6 or 7%, because 1,000 would be 7%, so somewhere a little bit less than 5%.
Exactly.
Okay. And, you know, in terms of making it attractive, I probably should have asked this at the beginning. What kind of salary, what kind of compensation are people looking at if they do this work? What's a starting salary for a firefighter?
First year salary is $37,000. After the first year, second year salary is roughly $41,000 a year. And then the third year salary is
$61,000. It's a decent wage, right?
Yes. It's decent. Not get rich money.
No.
But you can raise a family and do some of the things that you would want to do with an income. I mean, it's all about money management, but yeah, decent salary. And that's for 95 days of work.
During the course of a year. Are they allowed to have other employment, or is this...
Yes. Typically, firefighters either take on what we call a day-off job or a part-time job, or they run their own business.
And it's usually construction. Yeah. That's what I find with most firefighters.
We are talking about what it takes to recruit and find good people in public safety. My guests are Keith Givens and Dave Burston. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, executive editor of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We are talking about recruiting good public safety personnel here in Indiana and Indianapolis. My guests are Indiana State Police Captain Dave Burston and Indianapolis Fire Department Captain Kevin Givens. I used to work with a guy named Keith Givens at the newspaper, so I apologize for screwing that up, Kevin. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can email us at nolimits@wfyi.org or connect via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Dave Burston, we were talking right before the break about what the female representation was in the Indianapolis Fire Department and finding and recruiting good female candidates for positions there. Is that a challenge for the state police as well?
It is, from the aspect that we have the basic requirements, as I'm sure the fire department does, and I'd be interested for Kevin to jump in on this. One of the biggest issues when it comes to women candidates is the physical agility and passing the minimum requirement standards. So that presents a challenge. So While I'm going to go out on a limb, it may be a little bit easier for men to meet the standards. I think the women have to work harder at it. It is attainable. But when it comes down to at the end of the day, we've got to have a baseline requirement that everybody meets. And we can't have a different physical standard for men than we do for women. So I would say that the physical challenges are the hardest for women to overcome.
We are talking about public safety and finding the right people to do that work here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. Elena, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Certainly. What's on your mind?
I heard you talking with the fire department about what the annual salaries were. I don't know if I missed it or if the state police had talked about what their salaries are. I'd like to hear it compared to what the Metro police make. And possibly address some of the lack of increases that the state police had during the Daniels administration.
Got a good set of questions there. Thank you very much, Elena.
Uh-huh.
Well, Dave Burston, I think we'll start first with the same question I asked Kevin earlier.
Your question and Elena's as well. Yeah. In the academy, you're paid in the academy. I think that's similar to the fire service. So yes. When you're in the academy, you're getting an annualized salary, though you're not there for an entire year, of a little over $36,000. It works out to be just over $1,400 every 2 weeks. After you graduate, you get an increase to an annualized salary of $40,000. And then over the course of 20 years, there are annual increases, and to our top pay after 20 years is $60,000. As far as pay increases and things that have happened, I'll correct the record a little bit for Elena that prior to Governor Daniels coming into office, when he came into office, we had some of the most significant pay increases that we had had. Now, granted, this was in 2007 and 2008, but the overall increase between those 2 years was $10,000 annually. I can remember when I started my career in 1980 that my annual salary was $13,000, and I thought that was a lot of money. Obviously, times have changed since 1980 to present. We are always faced with the economic challenges that we're using tax dollars. The most expensive aspect of what we do is the human resources side of it, of providing the salaries and benefits. We work to be competitive. When you compare us to other law enforcement agencies, we're in the competitive range. Would everybody like to have more money? Absolutely. But you weigh the differences between what you can do with the resources that you have, the resources being the taxpayers.
Well, and the other part of Elena's question, I think, too, was how does it compare with, say, you know, police departments elsewhere in the state, metro police departments?
I don't know what IMPD's pay structure is, so I'm not equipped to answer that question. I know that their agencies, I believe that they have pay structures that they have more rapid pay increases over the first 3, 4, 5 years, whereas our increases are stretched out over a period of 20 years.
Do you lose people who go to other police departments because they want more money? I mean, is that a problem the state police face?
What I find is that most people that come into law enforcement do so, they fall into three categories. They just want to be in law enforcement, and they don't care what agency they work for, who. They're looking at city, county, state, or federal, and they're going to be driven by the income, and that will drive their decision where they go. There's another group of people that wants to be in law enforcement because it's something that's been in their family, or they specifically want to stay in a geographical area, be it the city where they grew up.
Do they get to choose if they're on the state police where they're stationed, where they work, or is that...
They fill out a little dream sheet, and we try to work within that. And the things that we look at is how did they perform in the academy? Are they married? Do they presently own property? Children? We try to factor in all those things, because just when you look at the stress levels of starting a new position and then having to uproot your family, nobody likes to do that. And we work very, very hard to meet those needs for people. But at the end of the day, if you're a single guy or a single gal going through the academy, it's a little less traumatic for you to be stationed somewhere else in the state than where you want to go.
Are there certain parts of the state that are harder to staff than others?
I think if you talk to some people, they say that they don't care to work up in the region. That would be up in Lowell. But people that are from there, they want to work there. Another place that sometimes people don't think they want to work is the toll road, but the toll road has incentive of $200 additional salary per month, but that is truly more highway patrol work. There is some criminal activity on the toll road, whereas when you think of the other state police posts, you get the full rounded traffic, criminal enforcement. The job is what you make of it.
We've gotten an email comment from a listener named Thomas, who says, and if you want to send an email and get a question on the air, you can do so by sending it to nolimits@wfyi.org. Both the police and fire department are severely limiting grade applicants with age restrictions. I have seen some unhealthy cops and firemen. It needs to change. I guess the other piece of this, then, question is really, once they get out of the academy, do you monitor their physical fitness levels if that is supposed to be one of the requirements of the job? I'll throw this one to Kevin Givens.
Okay. Thank you, John. Thanks. Yes. In the fire service, every suppression firefighter, and a suppression firefighter is someone that works in a firehouse. Mm-hmm. I'm on the administrative side. I'm in the office. I work 8 hours a day, 5 days a week. So I'm non-suppression. But a suppression firefighter every year has to pass what we call a WPE, which is a work performance evaluation. It's pretty similar to the test that a fire applicant would have to take. I mean, there's some variations in some of the drills that we would require, but every year you have to take this test and you have to pass, and I think it's a time test. I believe you have 9 minutes and 20 seconds or 9 minutes and 30 seconds to pass seven events. You have to do tasks that mimic what we do on a fire ground, be able to drag a 165-pound Mannequin, 75 to 80 feet. You have to be able to carry a load of hose up and down a flight of stairs four or five times. You have to do what we call a test called ceiling breach and pull. On the fire department, we use a tool called a pipe pole, which allows us to enter into a ceiling to pull down to see if the fire has extended above our head. And so there's two doors that you have to push and pull. One door weighs 80 pounds, another door weighs 60 pounds, and you have to do that. I think the 80-pound door, you have to do it 12 times, and the 60-pound door, you have to do 6 times. There's a forcible entry test where you have to swing a 10-pound sledgehammer against a pressure plate, drive it back so many feet, or so many inches, I'm sorry, to allow this buzzer to go off, and it's really testing your strength. You have to be able to navigate in a dark box, what we call a search maze.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be able to carry two of the saws that we primarily use on the fire department, a chainsaw and a K-12 saw. Those are the tests that consist of the work performance evaluation.
And what is the consequence of not passing that test?
If you fail to pass that test, I mean, obviously you get a second chance without any remediation. After, I believe, the third attempt, then we send you over to the National Institute for Fitness and Sports, get you a personal trainer through the fire department to set up a physical fitness regimen for you to get you to the standard.
And Dave Burstyn, is there sort of an ongoing physical fitness monitoring system for the state police as well?
I have to tell you that it's all voluntary. We have things available. We have a fitness coordinator with the Indiana State Police that will help design fitness programs for personnel. We participate in CrossFit and those that choose to do so voluntarily. There has been a time in the past where there was a required program that was many, many years ago. There's always an ongoing discussion about whether something like that should come back. I would tell you that it's incumbent upon the person to take care of themselves, and there are people that don't, because if you go, whether it's the fire service or law enforcement, if you are not able to have good command of your physical presence and your abilities to respond, it can be jeopardizing to your own well-being or the well-being of others.
Well, and I guess where I would go with that is, is that ever become part of the personnel review if you've got a trooper who is, say, 400 pounds and all of that? Is there
we haven't had anybody hit that limit yet.
Okay, so okay. But, well, that's good.
Yeah, there's not, once you've completed the academy and met the threshold requirements, at this present date and time, there's not a future requirement. Now, I will tell you that our current superintendent that just came into office, Superintendent Carter, he's wearing the same pant size now as when he came on the department his first tour back in the mid-80s. He's very much into the physical fitness aspect of it. Will standards change? I can't answer that question. That's possible. Now, I can tell you, for people that are interested, what do you have to do to get into the academy, the minimum requirements?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you've got to have a vertical jump of 16 inches. You've got to be able to do 29 sit-ups in 1 minute, a 300-meter run within 71 seconds. You have to be able to do 25 push-ups, consistent without stopping, though there's not a time limit. And you've got to be able to complete a 1.5-mile run in less than 16 minutes and 28 seconds. So you have to do that before you get in the academy. If you cannot achieve that, then you're dropped from the process to come in. And when it comes time to graduate, you have to meet or exceed that to graduate.
You've got to be, so the requirements don't change after you go through. Now, is part of the academy training, is there physical training that goes into that as well?
There's physical training virtually all through the academy. So they try to get people instilled in the good, healthy habits to have and encourage them to continue it and to participate in CrossFit. And the department allows duty time 3 times a week for you while you're working to take time for physical fitness.
We are talking about what it takes to find and keep good people in the public safety sector. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can do what a couple of these listeners have done and and connect with us via Twitter or Facebook at WFYI. We've gotten a couple of tweets. One of them is a comment from a listener named Stefan saying, so good to hear from our police and firefighters. Thank you for all your courage and hard work. Keep it up. I imagine that's gratifying to hear.
Thank you very much. Always appreciate the public support.
And then from a listener named Jessica says, other than patrol, what are some of the other things police officers, firefighters can do? SWAT, bomb squad, et cetera. And what training goes into all of that? We've had Dave talking here for a bit. I'll throw it back to you, Kevin.
In the fire service and on the Indianapolis Fire Department in particular, we have tactical houses, tactical teams that do. We have a collapse rescue team. We have a dive team also, a high-angle rescue team, heavy extrication. We have hazardous material team. We also have a decontamination team on the Indianapolis Fire Department. All of these disciplines require special training, and once you become a member of the department, when positions open up or training opens up, a firefighter can apply to train in those areas.
And I should say, obviously, you'd mentioned that there's specialized training that goes into that. Are there different compensation levels if you develop that particular expertise? And then the other thing I'm going to ask both of you is, does your compensation go up if you agree to take on more hazardous assignments, and which ones are considered the most hazardous? I'll stay with you, Kevin Gibbons.
Well, there's definitely an economic incentive to being on those teams. No one becomes a firefighter to become rich. Mm-hmm. And I tell recruits and applicants all the time, now, if you want to be rich, do not apply to the fire department. Public safety is probably not where you want to be. There's an economic incentive. Maybe $2,000, $3,000 per year on your salary for being on one of the specialized teams.
Are there some, though, the other piece of that are considered more hazardous, more dangerous than others? And does the pay go up if you agree to take on a more hazardous or dangerous assignment?
John, I'm not quite sure of the pay based on the danger mm-hmm. of the position. I wouldn't want to blanket it with, a guy that's on the hazmat team receives the same amount of compensation as someone on high angle rescue. But those numbers are pretty, they're in the same ballpark. Well, I mean, there's, a guy doesn't make $5,000 for being on a team opposed to a guy that's going into a hazardous material situation making $10,000. We don't have that gap. But there might be, a couple hundred dollars, $300 difference in a person's ability to earn.
Well, let me reframe it then and take it away from the economic piece. When you firefighters are talking, who are the guys that, are the ones who seem to take the most risk? And as we pointed out earlier in the show, basically they are still guys. Which ones are the ones who seem to be assuming the greatest risk?
Well, I'm a former truck man. I worked on a ladder truck, and I would be remiss if I didn't say ladder guys are the true firefighters on on any fire department.
You'll probably get some more tweets here in a minute.
We're going to get an overload of those. With all things being equal, I would have to say someone that's possibly on a hazardous materials team, their incidents would be more deadly or more detrimental because, it only takes a small amount of chemicals to be able to do someone in. But the inherent danger is in all of those disciplines. Dive rescue, high angle rescue, collapse team. So if I had to hang my hat on one, John, I would say hazardous material team.
Hazardous material team.
Yes.
And real quickly, who does the most dangerous work for the state police, Dave Burston?
Well, when you talk about the dangers, that's really a hard question to answer mm-hmm. because some people will tell you every traffic stop you make has the potential to be your last mm-hmm. and it requires the most attention. But then there are other assignments, such as people that work in our meth suppression teams that are going into biohazard materials and have to wear special suits. And inhaling those fumes can be life-ending, and sometimes it can cause long-term debilitating injuries. So Those are some things to consider. When we come back from the break, I'll tell you some more.
We are talking about public safety personnel here on No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, executive editor of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We're talking about what it takes to find and retain good people in the public safety sector. My guests are Indiana State Police Captain Dave Burstyn and Indianapolis Fire Department Captain Kevin Givens. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org or connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Dave Burstyn, we were talking right before the break.
Sure.
And you were in the middle of the thought, so I'm going to let you finish
Thank you. Unlike the fire service, our salary for state police and some other police agencies are different, and they'll have shift differential and they'll have special assignment pay. Our salary is based upon your rank and your time in service. The only exception, I mentioned earlier, people that are assigned to the toll road get an additional $200 a month, so $2,400 a year.
And why is that?
It's as
to pay the tolls here.
No. We got a little card for that.
Okay.
So, no, our inside joke amongst ourselves is start at the western border, drive east, make a left turn, come back. So it's an incentive to have people to stay and work on the toll road assignment as compared to working when you're in another county environment where you take a more diverse number of calls versus just all traffic-related calls. But there are many other opportunities within the state police. We have explosive ordnance disposal. That's more commonly referred to as the bomb squad. We have people that work in scuba as far as divers for recovery of evidence, recovery of people, search and rescue. We have canines, and our canines are cross-trained. They do drug and they do people searches. We also have bomb dogs. We have people in emergency response, which is commonly what people refer to as the SWAT teams that come out for some barricaded subjects, hostage situations, things of that nature. We have our commercial vehicle enforcement division. Those troopers concentrate on large trucks and enforcement of things related to large trucks. We have people assigned to governor security. They're the executive protection for the governor and first lady and the lieutenant governor. We have detectives. A lot of people think state police, and they just think of the highway patrol. We are not a highway patrol. We are a full-service law enforcement agency. We do burglaries, robberies, rapes, you name it. We do it all across the state of Indiana. And we do a lot of undercover operations
you solve
also.
Them or protect. You don't actually perform them.
No, we don't perform them. Okay. We perform the services to solve the crimes. Thank you for making that
clarifying.
Technical correction. But we also have our crime scene investigators. People see the different shows of the people gathering the evidence. And we haven't even touched on our civilian side with our civilian scientists and laboratory experts. I know we're concentrating on the police side of it. But the Indiana State Police Laboratory performs these services of solving crimes for police agencies all across the state.
And we've actually gotten a listener question from that person who didn't want to go on the air, who said, are there different requirements for the people, you know, like IT, administrative assistants, all of that, or do they have to meet the same requirements to work for either the fire department or the state police that an officer would in both cases?
For state police, for the civilian positions, they do not have the physical requirements, but for the people that want to, our civilian staff that work in the laboratory, they all are degreed, and they all are scientists.
Kevin Givens.
Yes, on the fire department side, like I said, we have sworn personnel, and all of those individuals have gone through the hiring process, have to meet the standards of taking this WPE every year. And then we have some employees that are civilian employees and just a small number of civilian employees. And they're not held to the same standard as a sworn firefighter.
We've gotten an email question from a listener named Suzanne. And if you want to send an email question to No Limits, just do so by sending it to nolimits@wfyi.org. This question is, what advice would you give to a candidate who has gotten eliminated at the interview portion of the application? What kinds of things can a person do to prepare for the interview? I think we'll start with Kevin Givens on that one.
Wow, that's a great question. Normally, I suggest that apply for different departments so you can get more practice interviewing in the actual test environment. But also, interview with your family. Record yourself. Audio, visual recording. I mean, sit in a mirror, work on all your mannerisms. I would say go to the internet, get a bank of questions, and sit down in the comfort of your home and go through that list of questions and answer that question. Have someone critique your interviews. Also, whatever field, whether it's police department or fire department, try to develop a relationship with some firefighters so that you can get more advice, maybe get a mentor. I would suggest doing all of those things. But the key is applying to different departments and getting more opportunities to be in that situation. In the example of IFD, I mean, we do a hiring press process every 3 years. So if you just wait every 3 years, you know, your skills are not going to get to the level. But there's fire departments all over the country, especially in a 5-hour driving radius mm-hmm. of this city that have processes all the time. Get in those processes, even if you don't want to be hired by that department. Go to that department to work on your skills, your oral interview skills, your test taking skills. That's a suggestion that I give a lot of recruits.
You'd mentioned finding a current firefighter to mentor. Does it help to network? I mean, is it one of those things where it helps to know people?
Yes. I mean, and fire departments, fire stations are pretty, you know, they're public buildings. And firefighters, I mean, we're by nature, you know, we're very compassionate. We're very nice, welcoming people. I'm sure if you went to a fire station and addressed some firefighters in the right way and told them about your intentions, I'm sure you would probably get someone that would help you in that station, or they would refer you. Hopefully they would refer you to me, the recruiter, and then we can work on some avenues that will help you navigate that.
Dave Burstyn.
Yeah, Kevin's given some good advice, and I would add that it depends upon the type of interview you're taking. Some interviews are open interviews. It's a give and take. It's more conversational. Many agencies have what's called a structured oral interview process. That means a specific question is asked, and the interview committee is looking to see anchors or specific points that the applicant hits in those, and there are no follow-up questions. The best way I can do is to give an example. The question may be, describe a time when you took a leadership position or you did something in a leadership role. And what the person answering would need to do would need to identify the problem. You know, I was in college and there was a special project coming in. I volunteered to be the person to head up that project. I recognized that I would need to identify other people to serve with me, and specific tasks would need to be done. I assigned those tasks to different people. We had regular meetings and we planned. And the example I'm giving here now is you have to go through step by step and orally describe everything that you've done to hit those anchor points. Open interviews, they're conducted completely differently. So practice with a structured oral interview. Do research on the internet to improve your interview skills.
We are talking about finding and recruiting the best people for the public safety sector. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org or connect via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. We've gotten several questions on this subject. I'm going to choose the one from a listener named Deanna because she frames it well. Do the state police prefer applicants with military experience? If so, what are the chances of getting a position as a civilian? Do you prefer applicants with military experience?
Well, from the civilian aspect of it, the military experience can't hurt you. Are we specifically looking for people with military experience? No, we're looking for the best applicant possible.
Is military experience helpful?
It certainly is not going to hurt you, especially depending upon what military occupational skill that you had. If you were a military police officer, for example, that transitions well into our service. If you're a civilian that had accounting experience, or you were a mechanic, that will certainly help you in civilian positions with the department. So it's not a must. It certainly doesn't hurt you.
And Kevin Givens, does military experience help with the fire department?
Well, having military experience, it doesn't. You don't gain any extra points for being military on our department. But obviously, being in that type of environment, it's conducive to the fire department. I mean, the fire department is a paramilitary department. So some of the same guidelines that the military follows, the fire department follows. Someone that's been in the military would have some, they've done that before, so they're very familiar with how we would operate.
The structure, yeah.
So that would definitely help. I mean, the people that are normally in the military, are they're very trainable. They can take orders. They know how to give an order. They're community servers. I mean, they're world servers. So,
Dave Burstyn.
And if I could add, while our minimum requirements, I don't think I talked about the requirements, you've got to be a United States citizen. You've got to be at least 21 years of age when you graduate. We talked about before. You've got to have vision correctable to 20/50. Have to have a valid driver's license. That should go without saying. Education, high school diploma or GED. Now, that said, the overwhelming majority of our people that apply have a college degree, or they have an associate's, or they have military experience with a combination of the associate's or the college degree. It is the exceptional high school graduate that does not have those things that will make it through the cutoff and be hired. So you need to have prior experience, college, or military experience to put you above the minimum standard.
We've gotten a couple of comments, tweets, from one from a listener named Bruce, who says, I think that my results, referring to the physical fitness portion of this, I think that my results would be closer to one sit-up in 32 minutes. and then from Melanie, who says, I would imagine people don't get into it for the money. I guess the other, that gets to kind of the motivation piece of this, which also I would think part of this, because these are high stress occupations. Am I right here?
Correct. Oh yeah, absolutely.
And positions of tremendous responsibility. Is there psychological testing? Do you look for specific kinds of people before you put a gun in their hands, for example?
Is psychological testing. It's part of the process to go to become a successful applicant to get the conditional offer of employment. So it's pretty in-depth, multiple questions. I don't know the exact number, but it's into the hundreds. And it's evaluated by a psychologist, because just what you said, do we want to put somebody in a position of power that has an ultimate possibility of life or death results? We want to make sure that the person has the mental capacity to make prudent decisions in stressful circumstances. So that's most definitely a requirement.
What sorts of things do you, in that, what sorts of things is the test likely to find or looking for?
They're looking for people that, in the battery of questions, and it's been a long time since I've taken that test, and they've not seen fit to ask me to take it again, so I take that as a good sign, that they're looking for in these questions. Many of them are repetitive. They're worded just a little bit differently to see how your answers change. They want to see that you are comfortable with yourself, that you're comfortable with being around other people, that you are able to work by yourself, that you have that sense of service to others. I think that's common, be it law enforcement or the fire service. And I think for law enforcement, you talk to a lot of people that are in it, they like to be outside. So they're out interacting with people. These tests look to see if you are self-motivated, to see if you can work without direction, and that you will make prudent decisions.
Kevin Givens, is there psychological testing for firefighters too?
Yes. We just administered our psych exam for our 39 recruits that we're going to hopefully swear in the middle of May. And it's a battery of tests, a battery of questions. Like Dave mentioned, I'm almost certain it was 500 questions, and the questions are repetitive. They're just structured a different way, and they're looking for consistencies. They're looking for, well, he answered this way on this question, and then we asked him again at question 400, and he was out in left field. So we're looking for people that have the ability to handle high-stress situations in this test. And this test, it determines that.
Do you, and I know Dave Burston wants to get back in here for a second, and I'll let you, but I want to take it in a different Are there times that you go back in and administer the test, or is there a check-in if a person who's already on the job has gone through a stressful or disorienting experience, such as, you know, either an on-the-job experience, I mean, both of you could have that, or, you know, a divorce, the death of a loved one, something like that adds, you know, adds stress to a person's life. I'll throw it to Dave Burston.
Short answer, yes. And it's based upon the things that you said there. If there's been a significant event, a police action shooting, there's going to be time spent with an after action review. If there's been some type of debilitating injury, be it mental or physical, you can be required to take a return to duty testing that could require, aside from the physical requirements, could require mental evaluation as well.
Kevin Givens.
Yes, we have that same animal on the fire side. I mean, we have a peer support group, which is a network of firefighters that reach out to help other firefighters when they have these critical incidents. We're also teamed with some mental health specialists, and we simply call it our EAP, Employees Assistance Program. And all of that is under the umbrella. You know, it could be a family altering incident. It could be a divorce. It could be financial. It could clearly be an incident where you responded to and it was very traumatic. We have teams that are dispatched to assist and talk to those firefighters to just get a feel for how they're handling everything.
What is the most stressful part of the job? We're getting close on time, so I'll say, what is the hardest part of it? Dave Burston.
I'll probably get some calls when I say this. I will tell you that probably the most stressful part happens just within the department. Policies, procedures, administrative things. You know, there's any given day of the week, I'd be happy to go to an armed robbery call with somebody in the building as compared to some of the paperwork I've got to complete and the timelines that I have to do it in.
At least you get an adrenaline rush when you're doing the
exactly.
When you get the other, yeah.
So, you know, from if you take out the departmental aspects of it as far as doing the job, it's just constantly being aware, being on guard, not getting lazy in what you do, whether it's the fire service or law enforcement. If you get complacent in the execution of your duties, that can cost you, worst case scenario, your own life. Next worst case scenario, it can cost a citizen their life.
Okay. Kevin Givens, in about 15 seconds, most stressful part.
Well, for me, and this is, and everybody has a different stress threshold. Sometimes just responding to the run, getting on the apparatus and going down the street, red lights and siren is very dangerous. But obviously, in the dead of winter, with the weather that we just have, going up on a roof to ventilate, you have equipment that's wet and frozen. It's riddled with ice. That's a very, very dangerous, situation.
That'll have to be the last word. Dave Burston, Kevin Givens, I'd like to thank you both for being with us today. It's been a pleasure talking with you.
You're very welcome.
Thank you very much.
We will be back on Thursday when we're going to be talking about rising gas and food prices. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Producer, Sharon Alseth. Interactive Media Coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical Producer, Jeanette Rhodes. And Board Engineer, Don Hibschweiler. We invite you to join us each week for No Limits, made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.